Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante, along with our very special guest, a member of the Penn State Board of Trustees, Barry Fenchek. So Barry, any excitement on the board the last couple weeks?
Well, there's been a lot of excitement all the way around, you know, and I suppose we could talk a little bit about some of the stuff that everybody's excited about, right? We had, I'm trying to remember the last time you and I spoke, Jim. It's been too long, but some interesting stuff on the sports scene for Penn State, certainly, right? With Katie Shoemaker's team and that women's volleyball Final Four, which, honest to goodness, Jim, that was about as perfect a sports event as I think we've had in a long time. I mean, it really had everything, didn't it? And what an effort by those ladies. I mean, that was just a pleasure to watch.
It really was. And I think a lot of the non-football, non-basketball, even wrestling sports, they get overlooked. But you're right. That was such an incredible finals there in Louisville, where you had the home crowd for Louisville, just exciting games. And then, you know, the personal story of the head coach. Just, you know what, Barry, if they made a TV movie out of this, people would just say, why do they go so unrealistic here? It's a fantasy that they put out there instead of something that could be real world. That's how good a story it was.
Yeah, it was like the 1980 men's hockey team, right? If you did the movie before it actually happened, you know, everybody would laugh at how silly it was. But and we had, I think since we last spoke, we had postseason games for the football team in Indy.
Yes.
At home, which is interesting. Out in the desert, down at the beach. I mean, you kind of had everything, right? Where do you want to go? I mean, unfortunately, it was, I guess there was one bridge too far, but, what a month for Penn State football fans to live through all that. And we got wrestling coming up this weekend.
I know. It's really, I think, forgotten how good Penn State athletics is. And just real quick, before we get, and we are going to get to the stadium question, sure, and the naming rights, we'll get to all that. But I did want to ask you, and I'm glad you brought it up, this from the time the expanded playoffs was a gleam in the eye of whoever it is, the football committee, the conferences, or whatever, my biggest hope for all that was a home playoff game. And Barry, we got it. We got it.
Now, that's not going to happen every year, right? I mean, who knows what the playoff system or the postseason system is going to look like 5 or 10 years from now? It could be completely different, right? About all we know is that we don't know what it's going to look like. But, those situations aren't going to come up that often. I mean, they really aren't. That's what 4 teams in the nation get the way it is now, a home playoff game. The chances that you're one of those 4 aren't that great. So that's a situation I hope people realize, this may not come around again real soon.
Well, Barry, let's put into effect the gym plan, okay?
This is going to be a great plan. I know it already.
Well, they're talking about expanding the playoffs to either 14 or 16 teams. Now, to me, if you're going to go to 14, you may as well just go to 16. Kind of an arithmetic.
I knew it would be a brilliant plan.
Okay. It's like I have a guest on our show weekly who's a Big Ten sports writer for Sports Illustrated. And I asked him, the basketball conference tournament, they have 15 teams in it. There's 18 teams and they put in 15. What a bizarre number to use. I know there's some limitations, games per day and so on, but still. Anyway, the idea for me, 16 teams, first round means 8 games. Make them all home games. Mm-hmm. College football is so much about the home stadiums and what goes on with it. We have the good fortune of having the whiteout Everything at Beaver Stadium just makes it special. Other schools have similar things. If you've gone to away games, you can see how special it is at those stadiums also. To me, and this is maybe a little bit, and this might be sacrilegious for me to say this, and it's not that I don't want a national championship, okay? I do, Barry. But to me, it's the trip along the way. Yeah. And as you mentioned, you could either cry about how that final game in the semifinals, how that game went, or you could say glass half full, the home win, you know, the win out in the desert. The trip was fantastic. What a fun season.
You know, I didn't get an invite, Jim. I just, for future reference, you know, I remember these things. But you know, you're right. And I'll tell you, the you know, the 82 and 86 games, you know, I was in school at that time and you got the two national championships. But I think the best postseason Penn State game that in my memory is the one we lost out at Rose Bowl against USC in 2016. That was a fabulous football game with absolute elite level talent. Two really good. I still think those two teams at the end of the year may have been the best in the country. You know, they didn't get into the four, obviously. But what a great game. And you say it's the journey, right? Yeah, it didn't work out there in the last 30 seconds of the game we would have liked. But what a fabulous game for a sports fan. You know, and you know, some of the teams that I've, when we talk about football, those teams immediately after, you know, the sanctions, you know, those teams that were scrapping to try and get eight wins. Boy, was that fun. You know, a win against Army was fun. Right, because of everything that was going on and the emotions, and my goodness, how could you not love that? Right? Yeah, they weren't 12-0. Okay, boy, that was great football.
It's funny you say that the way that you do, because I've often brought up. Could you imagine being an Alabama fan over the last decade, where you go into a season, 11 out of the 12 games are irrelevant.
Yep.
There's only one game that matters, okay? And I mentioned during those seasons with the sanctions, every game they could have lost and could have won. We saw some of the upsets that they had, but it made you enjoy each game. It's why, and I know we're kind of going off tangent here, but
we never do that, Jim.
Yeah, something, you know, they should sit in on one of our breakfasts together. They'd be amazed at where the conversation goes. But if you looked, I don't know if you looked ahead to the 25 schedule, the three out-of-conference games to start the season are just ridiculous, Barry. Now, I will be there. I'll enjoy the tailgating and everything that comes with it. But, boy, could you just bring in a team with a pulse instead of – you know, Nevada.
Right. I know we've talked about that. And there are obviously limitations driven by finances. And we get that. And I think we probably both realize that you have to have two cupcakes out of those three. You know, you
fair enough.
You make the money work out. But by golly, that third should be the best team you can get. I maybe shouldn't say that because it sounds critical. But I just think from a fan standpoint, we kind of owe them that. And you know, so we have that one out of conference home and home we can do each year. And, you know, a couple of years ago, it was West Virginia. Okay. I mean, people, you know, there's still some history with West Virginia and they have the potential to be a good team, you know, at the time you schedule them. But home and home with Temple, you know, I don't think that's really, I don't think it's really fair to the fans. I don't think it's really fair to the players. You know, you know, those opportunities for players are much more fleeting than they are for us fans, right? I mean, if they're really lucky, they might start 20 games in their career, and that's a guy who had a heck of a career. Go to Philly and play Temple or go down to Knoxville and play Tennessee. What do you want to do?
Well, that's why I've even said, you know what, that out-of-conference game doesn't have to be against Alabama or Georgia. You mentioned West Virginia. Fun games. You know, it's early in the year, as I always put it, in that first game. Hey, West Virginia was undefeated going into that game. They truly believed they were going to win the game, which is great. Also, Auburn. Again, Auburn's not the top of the Southeast Conference, but it's a name brand. Penn State fans were excited to have him here. And I often bring this up because I don't go to many of the away games, but I went to the Penn State at Auburn game. Mm-hmm. My goodness, the atmosphere down there, Barry.
Yeah.
Incredible. What a fun time tailgating. Their fans, they were as excited about having Penn State there as we were to have them in Happy Valley.
Yeah.
It was more than a football game. It was an event.
Yeah. And, you know, this expanded postseason and, you know, all that money that's coming from the TV folks, I think for those of us who would like to see more of those quality of games, I think that may help us, right? Because now at the expanded playoffs, it's not one and done, right? Or you lose one game and then you're hanging by a thread for the rest of the year. You can lose two. I mean, if you're a Big Ten team and you play a solid schedule and you lose three games, you can be in the postseason. You know, and the TV folks, I think, are going to start to say, and I'm not privy to those conversations, hey, you know, we're spending an awful lot of money. I don't really want to have my time slots filled with Penn State Temple or, you know, Ohio State Akron or whatever. You know, let's gig it up a little bit for the folks who are signing the checks, right? So I'm hopeful that will happen.
Well, what's encouraging now, everybody, the national narrative on this Southeast Conference and Big Ten wanting automatic bids, mm-hmm. okay? They want four automatic bids. The bright side to it is that if they could get the automatic bids, they are more likely then to create these games. And the conversation is having a Big Ten Southeast Conference challenge kind of weekend. Yeah. Could you imagine that, Barry? Start of the year, Labor Day weekend. I can name you right off the top of my head eight or nine Southeast Conference teams that it doesn't matter which one Penn State plays.
Right.
I would be all over it.
Yep. And you know who would be all over it more than us? The folks at CBS and Fox and NBC, right? They would, it's certainly, I mean, it's just, they would love that.
Oh, exactly. Like I said, if you do that first weekend, that Labor Day weekend, you could literally start the games Thursday, Barry, and play through Monday and just own the entire weekend. The entire weekend is Big Ten Southeast Conference Challenge. The only downside to it is, I'd be in my Barca lounger straight from Thursday through Monday, Barry.
We'd hook you up to an IV drip. You'd be all right.
If you just put some buffalo wings and beer on the side table, that's it. Just lock the door. Jim is good. All right. Yeah. That's it for quarter one. When we come back, we're going to talk about the actual topic I had you on here for, Barry. We'll do that right after this. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galanti. My special guest is Board of Trustee member Barry Fencheck. It's quarter number two of our show, and Barry, I brought you in because I really wanted to talk about this stadium, the field naming situation. But before we get there, since we already spent a whole segment going off tangent a bit, let's keep going down that line. I know many of our listeners, and if you're a Penn State fan, you know there's so much more going on the board and so much of this controversy. It involves you, Barry. Should I say the embattled trustee, Barry Fencheck? Could you give us a quick update on just what's going on the legal side and everything else?
Yeah. I understand where the term would come from. I don't necessarily consider myself embattled, but it's certainly a David Goliath kind of a situation. You know, as some folks may know, you know, we've got you know, ongoing legal issues with between myself and the board, you know, over the, you know, speaking of David and Goliath. So, you know, Penn State, you know, has a cadre, you know, of attorneys there, you know, representing their side of things. They hired Marshall Dennehy, which is a large law firm, to represent them. They hired a litigating law firm out of Philadelphia to represent them. And they recently hired Jones Day, which is, for folks in the legal profession, that's one of the largest, you know, law firms in the world. So, you know, they're that's kind of the map of the players. And, you know, that's, you know, myself and my legal team at Obermeyer, who I'm very grateful to, you know, Terry Mutchler and Justin Barrett and Erica Silverbright, and they've been doing wonderful work, and we've made a lot of progress in that regard. But that's still ongoing. You know, we've achieved a lot through that lawsuit. You know, we've gotten access to information they said we weren't allowed to have, which now is, you know, available to all the trustees. You know, as you know, they tried to remove me from the board, and we defended that, and, you know, now they're, you know, doing that again. So and certainly we'll continue to pursue our legal options there. As we've got this election coming up, you know, for Board of Trustees seats. My spot is up for re-election this year. So that's the urgency of that situation. So, you know, when I ran for the board, you know, 3 years ago, you know, people asked, you know, what the plan was, and I pretty much told them that, you know, my plan is every day to, you know, act in the best interest of the university and all the stakeholders, right? Which is a complex bit, right? We've got taxpayers, we've got faculty, we've got alumni, we've got students, and you know, for the last, you know, 2+ years, that's what I've been doing. And I think we've made some real positive progress, not only with, you know, every issue that comes up before the board, and I think I've consistently acted in the best interest of the university community on all of them, but, you know, we've also you know, made progress on this issue with these, you know, executive committee meetings, which, you know, for 12 years weren't, you know, were done behind a curtain, and now they're not. You know, we've gotten access to information that wasn't previously provided to the trustees. So we're making progress, and, you know, I'm committed to continuing to try to do that, which includes, obviously, you know, pursuing, you know, our legal remedies to allow Penn State alumni to choose who they want to take those seats on the board, right? To not have their votes stolen, but to allow them to choose who they want to be representing their interest. And hopefully that will be me, but we've got to deal with some legal issues to get there. I'm sorry, trying to explain these legal issues concisely is something that's a challenge at times. I apologize for running on a bit there.
Not a problem. The one thing down that path that I do want to ask you about, and without having to go into any legal things that you can't reveal, but not too long ago, the board created a rule where there's only a handful of trustees that are voted on by the alumni, us, okay? And it's always been the path to do that is if you wanted to run for the board, I think you need to get so many signatures. Mm-hmm. And if you do, okay, you are now on the ballot to run. But the board created a rule that said they have to approve people who run. Could you just quickly tell us what the status of that is? Because I think all alumni should be very upset that they're not deciding, that there's this group who are unelected on the board who could tell me who I'm allowed to vote for and who I'm not allowed to vote for.
Well, I can tell you that you're understanding that a lot of alumni are upset. There's no question about that, because I hear from those folks every day, and they are upset. And, you know, I think they have certainly a right to be concerned. The procedure was always, you know, X number of nominations, which are, you know, the signatures you're referring to. That had been 250. That was dropped to 50 nominations needed, and that the individual had to be a Penn State alum, right? The candidate had to be a Penn State alum, and that they couldn't have worked for the university for a period of time, which is 5 years. And those were the criteria. And those criteria remain, but now there's, as you mentioned, this interjection of a small number, relatively small number of members of the board who have this kind of bequeath themselves this ability to determine who's qualified to be on the ballot. There were 19 folks who met those criteria I talked about earlier, right, with the signatures yes. and what have you. And of those 19, 18 of them were deemed to be qualified. One was not, which obviously surprised everybody. So that's where we're at. And, you know, in broad strokes, that's, you know, there were many issues with the legal situation, right, which we won't get into all those details, but that certainly is an issue of immediate concern with the elections coming up. And, you know, but that's with myself and, you know, the David here, who doesn't even have a slingshot, you know, going up against the four Goliaths. That's an issue that we're working to address, you know, as we speak.
Well, just remember, David is 1-0, Goliath 0-1. So going into this game.
And I think in the Ken Palm rankings, we're moving up. So,
all right. Hey, how about we move on to our purpose for today? As we've got the naming rights to the field. This all came about last week. We've had a few days for it to settle. Let me start with this so that we understand it. Barry, could you explain when something like this occurs? And we had this, you know, with the stadium renovation, representatives of the university, the athletic department, the administration, they come to the board. Explain this process to us, just how that all works, what the logistics of it are. It kind of reminds me, remember when we were kids on Saturday morning, they did, how does a bill become a law?
Yes.
Could you give us that? How does a bill become a law at Penn State?
Well, in this, you know, the process can be a little different depending on the particular situation. In this situation, I can tell you, so about a week before, give or take, what that meeting was held, which was Monday the 10th, Monday morning the 10th, you know, the members of the board, including myself, were alerted to the fact that there would be a board meeting on that day. Myself and I believe several other trustees, you know, said, okay, fine. What's it about? And speaking for myself and I think other board members, the response was, well, you'll find out later. Later proved to be Friday night before the Monday morning meeting. And so this proposal was put forward Monday. And then was voted on by
I'm sorry to interrupt, Barry, but before you get there, you said you were made aware Friday. Was that in an official capacity or just somehow word leaked?
I think all the trustees were made aware at the same time, Friday night. Now, when I say all the trustees, certainly there were some involved who knew for a lot longer, you know, weeks, months, maybe a year longer. Who knows? You know, that this was a consideration and a proposal and certainly had even, you know, the details of the proposal, you know, well before the rest of us who received it, you know, Friday evening, which is disconcerting, okay, from a standpoint of governance and fiduciary duty and what have you. Now, some issues are rather simple, right? I said sometimes it kind of depends. You know, what this proposal was, and just because there was a lot of social media misunderstandings, or I think people heard something wrong, and then you know how social media is, right? Yes. It gets spread out there. You know, people talk about it being a 50-year deal and this, that, and the other thing. So essentially what it is for 15 years, the business will have naming rights to the field at Beaver Stadium. For the most part, there's a slight skewing of how much is paid in different years, but roughly speaking, figure a little over $3 million per year on average over 15 years that will be paid for a 15-year, you know, quid pro quo, if you will, from the standpoint of Penn State to, you know, allow the organization to have naming rights to the field. That, so that's it's a little, if it was, let's say, an outright gift, right? I mean, the value of these, of the revenue generated from these naming rights in terms of present value is about $25 to $30 million, depending on how you look at it, right? For folks who are financially oriented, it'd be the equivalent of getting that much money up front, but it's going to come in over a period of years, which is fine. If it were an outright gift, that's a lot simpler, right? Somebody says, hey, I'm going to give you $30 million or whatever the amount may be. You're barring some really unusual situation. I mean, the response from the board is, thank you very much, right? And I think Everybody's, you know, perfectly fine and happy with that. But, you know, that's not the nature of this. It's a business transaction. And then further complicating that, some business transactions, again, you just need to evaluate them, right? Does this make sense? Is this a fair deal, right? What we're giving up, what we're getting, does that make sense? And let me just go off on a tangent a little bit. The fact that we have a business that wants to spend their money at Penn State is great, right? And, you know, I'm thankful for that a business wants to spend their, you know, advertising marketing money at Penn State. That's wonderful. But this, because of the nature of this transaction, there are other options that are mutually exclusive, right? That complicates the analysis, right? And there's a reason why, as a board, there's maybe a need or responsibility to do a little more evaluation. So we'll get back to that in just a minute.
Okay, yes, we're up against the break. We'll pick it up from there as soon as we get back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. Our guest is Board of Trustee member Barry Fencheck. This is quarter number three of our show, and Barry, I cut you off in the middle of a conversation when we wrapped up segment number two. Go ahead. You can pick it up right from where you left off.
Yeah. So as I said, one of the reasons that as a board, as any fiduciary governing body, you know, sometimes you have fairly complex situations, and that's why you need to get them, discuss them, get all the ideas out on the table, evaluate them. And that's the proper way to do things. And this is one of those situations that has some mutual exclusivity, right? If we do A, we can't do B, right? If we do B, we can't do C. One of the issues specific to this naming rights issue that I brought up, it's not like you can, right? You can't have a deal with one entity for naming rights and then, you know, 3 months later have another deal with another entity, right? It's kind of an exclusive deal. And there are any number of options that we could have and should have from a fiduciary standpoint, evaluated. Now, it's not my job to say, here's what we should do, right? It's not anybody's job on the board to say, here's what we should do, right? This should be a deliberative process. But just as an example, because no one else seemed to be concerned, most folks didn't seem to be concerned about actually doing that deliberation, was, you know, and I know that naming rights to a stadium are far more valuable than naming rights to a field.
Correct.
And if one of the things we're looking to do is maximize revenue, and we need to maximize revenue for a lot of reasons, you know, maybe that should be a consideration. And just real quick, I mean, USC wanted to sell their naming rights to the stadium out in LA, right? And they had an offer on the table like 10 years ago for $7 million a year, probably more than $10 million a year now. That's a lot of money. They were ready to do it, except the problem that they ran into, they leased their stadium from Los Angeles. And the municipality said, no, you can't sell those naming rights to the stadium. You're just the leaser. We're the owner. So they couldn't do that. So they sold the naming rights to the field for about 10 cents on the dollar. Right. I mean, you know, Wisconsin names their field after Barry Alvarez for a small fraction of what Minnesota gets for naming their stadium after, was it some bank or what?
Happened. Yes.
So that's, so you combine that. Now, some folks maybe don't want to take Beaver Stadium off of there, right? Because it's a legacy, it's tradition. And we understand that, right? There's a value to that too. There's a value to that, to our stakeholders, right? That they see that as something that they want to preserve. So you know, maybe you don't do that, but one of the options, if you look at it in total, and this certainly came up, let's say you name the field for Joe Paterno, Joe and Sue Paterno, and you sell the naming rights to the stadium. That brings in how much money? I don't know, but certainly more than selling the naming rights to the field, right? And then you preserve a lot of that legacy, quite frankly, of the 100,000 people that file into Beaver Stadium every week. I doubt if 10% of them know who James Beaver is, right? It doesn't mean they don't want to continue that tradition, but they really don't know. There's not some strong tie to that. No, on the other hand, Joe Paterno, yeah, I would bet you 9 out of 10 at least know who Joe Paterno is, right, and have some feelings regarding that. So that would be a way to, if the idea here is to preserve legacy and tradition and honor the concerns and of our alumni and our supporters, you could, again, kill two birds with one stone. You honor the legacy in a way that a lot of people would have been, you know, would like, and you bring in more money, which as a board, we certainly like. And as I wrote up in a article on the meeting, you know, that goodwill that you create with supporters, alumni, the folks who buy the tickets, that has a monetary value, right? That's something that leads to donations, et cetera, et cetera. There's any number of options we could have looked at, right? And I won't go off on tangent on some of the others, because the point being that there are other options. And when we make this decision, we eliminate at least some of those options. And that's not something we should do without reasoned analytical deliberation. And I tried to get them to move the final vote on this till May when we had our next meeting, and in the interim, do those deliberations and actually evaluate these options. But that wasn't to be.
Whose responsibility is it to do that due diligence? Is that the responsibility of the board, or is it the administration? So if it's the responsibility of the board, it hardly seems like it arriving on your desk on Friday and then Monday morning, a final vote doesn't seem logical.
Yeah. I mean, certainly, you know, there's a separation of powers, if you will, right. And it's the administration's, you know, responsibility. And then they're right, to come forward with proposals that they say, present to the board and say, hey, here's something we could do. What do you think, right? And actually, most of the times, they don't have to come to the board, right? It depends on the magnitude of the impact, right? This is one with great public interest, right, and it's significant financial impact, so it has to come to the board. And yeah, it's the board's responsibility to do that deliberation, to ask those questions, to evaluate those options, and to do so with the best interest of the university at heart. Now, again, university is a complex beast, but that's the responsibility.
Well, do we know if the university did any of this? Set the Paterno field to the side for a second, okay? We'll get back to that.
Sure.
But it was this West Shore Home came to Penn State and said, hey, I'll give you $50 million for naming rights. Did the university put this out for bid? Did they talk to other entities to see what the value is? What was that process? Did they investigate, you know, gee, if we can get X dollars for naming the field, what could we get for the stadium? And maybe we should look into that. Did any of that happen by the university?
To the best of my knowledge, and I'm a trustee, right? And to the best of my knowledge, the answer to that is no. Now, I have heard from other trustees who said that efforts were made at different times to get the university to evaluate some of those other options. That's not personal information for me. I don't, like I said, all I know is that I am not aware of any of that type of work being done. Like I said, I asked that we delay the vote so that we could do that type of work. And the response, and actually, I asked that question to my colleagues on the board. And when I raised that question, it was diverted. Raised that concern. It was diverted to AD Pat Kraft, who's not a member of the board, right? That's not his responsibility. I mean, he has duties to the university, but not as a board member. And the response was this close to verbatim that you know, when I raised those concerns, that this, meaning this deal with West Shore, was the deal we had before us. Well, that wasn't the question. The question is, what other options should we be looking at as a board, right? Not what packages did Pat Kraft have available for us to look at today. I'm sorry, I probably got off on a tangent there, but yeah, to the best of my knowledge, and one would think if these things were done, it would be in my purview of knowledge, right? That I'd be aware of that. To the best of my knowledge, no, those weren't done.
Do we know who initiated this? Now, I know that there's other parts of the renovation that people have made donations and got it named, you know, of the club or so on and so forth. So was this, do you know, Penn State put out, hey, we're going to, you know, the naming rights for the field are up for grabs for $50 million. Or was this West Shore Home came to the university and said, hey, would like to make a donation. How about field naming? Do we know how the process happened?
I should know, but no, I say that by because I'm a member of the Board of Trustees, one would think I should know if that took place. To the best of my knowledge, it didn't. I can only go by what I know. And again, to the best of my knowledge, that didn't happen. Like I said, when I raised the question, Pat said that, AD Kraft said, you know, this is the only thing we have before us. So again, that wasn't a question directed to AD Kraft. If that happened, I'm not aware of it. And if that happened and I'm not aware of it, that's disconcerting.
How does Barry, we hit on this a little bit. Naming of the stadium would probably get you more money than naming of the field. Does giving up the naming rights to the field have any effect on selling naming rights to the stadium? You know, I always use like Pepsi. Does Pepsi, if they were to give a lot of money for the stadium, do they want it to be West Shore Home Field at Pepsi Stadium, you know, and all the signage saying things like that?
I would think generally, and again, it would depend on the negotiations you had with, let's say, Pepsi, right? And my hunch, just as somebody who follows this, right, as you do, I don't think that a corporate sponsor would be concerned over the fact that there's also this name attached to the quote-unquote field. I doubt if that would be the case. But again, one of the concerns I raise is if you're trying to balance money as well as, you know, legacy and honoring tradition, if you sell both of those, that's done. So if you did the naming rights to the stadium and bring in more money and use the field, it sounds somewhat overly pragmatic, but use the field to, you know, honor the legacy and the tradition and quite frankly, the wishes of a hell of a lot of alumni and supporters, which has a value, right? And, you know, some other trustees brought up numbers of what they felt that value was, right? And quite frankly, I think that value would be substantial. You can never put an exact dollar figure on it because it's forward looking. But, you know, if we did, and again, I'm not saying this is my idea and it's the greatest thing since sliced bread and this is what we do. But if we sold the naming rights to the stadium, made more money, honored Joe and Sue Paterno with the naming of the field, I think that not only honors our legacy, which a lot of people would be happy with, but that makes more money too. I believe that would be the case. And I think it's a substantial amount of money. So not evaluating that, and taking this step, which certainly would preclude doing that now for at least 15 years, as a type of things being mutually exclusive, I'm not comfortable with that. And I don't think as fiduciaries, we should be comfortable that we haven't evaluated those things.
Very good. All right. That is it for quarter number three of the show. When we come back, I want to dig in a little bit more into what Paterno Field could have done for the university. Could it have raised more money? And also, when we talk about these dollars, we often forget net present value. I want to ask you about that also, Barry, when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. I'm Jim Galante. He is Barry Fenchek from the Penn State Board of Trustees. We're talking about the naming rights to the Beaver Stadium field that just took place last week. A couple quick questions on it before we get into this, why not Paterno Field? The one question is, what is the responsibility now of media or whoever in referencing the stadium? So Mets broadcast, it's easy. It's Citi Field in New York. You know, that's where they're coming from. Right. This is Beaver Stadium. Because of that naming, are we going to start seeing, the announcers on ESPN and Fox? Is Gus Johnson going to say, coming to you from West Shore Field at Beaver Stadium? And is there any obligation to do that?
You know, I'll tell you, I have not seen a contract on that. As you may recall, we have this contract with Elevate, right, which is much, much bigger, right? And I had to go to court to win access to that contract. And then you can see exactly what that spells out. With this, I certainly don't have that. I can imagine that there will be signage and logos and things like that. I can't imagine there wouldn't be some contract that spells out, okay, you get to put your logo on the 35 yard lines or signage throughout the stadium or X number of mentions on the radio broadcast of the game, right? Or something that we control that way, right? I would think, and only because if I'm sitting in the seat of somebody at West Shore Homes, I want to know what I'm getting for my money. So I imagine that's the case. I can't say that I've seen that contract or it's been presented that said exactly what those parameters would be. I hate to just say, well, yeah, we'll see when we see, but we will see pretty soon, right? It's only going to be a few months and we'll kind of see how that plays out. I don't necessarily have any preconceived notions that there would be some issue there that some people might be unhappy with. I would think it would be pretty standard stuff. There were concerns raised as to whether or not this would provide, the contract or the agreement would provide access to other things that some of us might not want in that contract, but I don't have any reason to believe that that's the case.
All right, let's get to this, the idea of Paterno Field. That's something that's been bandied about by fans, by some members of the board. Did anyone think about saying, okay, if it were named Paterno Field, I always hear the talk, so much money would start coming in because of that. Did anybody take it upon themselves to say, you know what, let me go out and see, not ask, the little guy who's going to throw in $10, but did anyone say, go to some potential major donors and say, would you make a commitment if it were named Paterno Field so that somebody could come back and say, you know what, hey, $50 million is great, but I've got commitments for $80 million, $100 million if we were to name this Paterno Field. Did anyone think to do that?
My understanding is that the trustees did ask the university to take on a task like that. I didn't, right? But my understanding is that others have and that they were rebuffed in that regard. Again, I can't speak to that in the first person, but that is my understanding. And I haven't heard anything differently. I certainly am not aware of any attempts that were made, which, and again, we talk about kind of separation of powers, if you will. You know, that's the type of thing that you would expect the administrative folks to do, right? In donor relations, et cetera, et cetera. And if they didn't, you would expect that the board would have an interest and say, hey, why don't you do this, right? So we have better information. To the best of my information and knowledge, that hasn't happened, not because some folks didn't ask for it, right? But because some folks asked for it and it didn't happen, to the best of my knowledge.
I'm going to look at this and I'm going to defend the idea of not wanting the Paterno Field. Yeah. I'm going to put a theory out to you. My feeling is that anytime that's brought up, you and I, most people of a certain age, went through what happened a dozen years ago, and it was amazing. I mean, I would travel the country. If I had a Penn State shirt on, literally people would look at me differently, okay, for that, Barry. And even a year ago or so, Anthony Lebrano, another trustee, he brought up the idea of Paterno Field. Mm-hmm. It was tabled at Jay Paterno's request for another day. And even at that time, I started reading national articles. Again, you bring up the Penn State cult, the football is everything. We all know it just opened up those wounds from a dozen years ago. So, Barry, I could kind of appreciate why some people would not want to go down that path, because those are the people who would have to answer to it. I don't think if it were Paterno Field, Pat Kraft would spend months having to respond to those issues in every interview that he did.
Yeah, and these are the conversations we should have, right? We should have an exchange of viewpoints, and that's certainly one that should be part of the process. I agree 100%. Within that context, I think we have to recognize as trustees that our duties to the university, right? And that's as I said before, that's a complicated beast, right? Because there's a lot of elements to that. And whether it's our fans and supporters and the impacts to the university, you know, do I feel over all these years that the positive impact to our stakeholders would be significantly more than any negative impact from, you know, quote unquote outside sources? I do, right? But it shouldn't be just me saying that, right? These are things we should honestly and openly deliberate as a board. I think you certainly would have, the sports writer at the Washington Post or at Sport, you know, somewhere that write very negative articles that, you know, Penn State is being tone deaf or what have you. And not to completely disregard those, but our primary allegiance, our primary fiduciary duty is to Penn Staters, right? I think they're overwhelmingly, and because I hear from them, I've heard from them for years and years and years, they would love to see that happen. They would be much more likely to loosen up their wallets if that were to happen. I feel pretty confident that that's the case. The blowback from the outside media, first of all, they aren't necessarily the folks who were supporting the university to begin with, right? If someone 15 years later is going to recycle the news cycles from 2011, right, as if they are, gospel, that's somebody who's never on your side anyway, and they never have been. Again, do we want to necessarily have to deal with some period of time where that blowback takes place? No, but is it worth it for doing what I think most Penn Staters feel is very much the right thing, and I think is very much the right thing towards the long-term monetary value as well? Again, we should discuss it, right? We should discuss it, and folks, even if they weren't concerned about the things you just mentioned, in a board, we should discuss all those things, right? Even if it's from a devil's advocate standpoint, so that we hash out all those implications and are prepared to make the best decision and prepared to make the best decision with the best plan in place to make it work as well as possible. So we should be having those conversations. And ideally, if we have a bunch of folks, we're going to have differences of opinion, and we work those out as best we can.
It's interesting because you're different values. And I had a colleague when we had a similar conversation, and I'm not sure exact if it was generically honoring Joe and Sue Paterno. And he made the comment, there's never a bad time to do the right thing. So I get that from the Penn State perspective. But I also see that if you look up through the chain of command at Penn State, the head coach, the athletic director, the president of the university had no ties to Penn State prior to the time they arrived. So I also get that, do they want to live with the repercussions of something that occurred before they showed up at the door?
And I get that. Right. And I think that is a very real analysis from a human level. Right. There are people who just don't want another item on their to do list that day. Right. And none of us do. Right. But if the overall benefit to the university outweighs any potential downside, then that's what you have to do. How do you get to make that determination? Right. It's not easy because it's forward looking. Right. All of these things are forward looking. I think we can I feel reasonably comfortable. I feel very comfortable, and we may disagree, but I feel very comfortable that the long-term positive would certainly outweigh the negative. And again, others may disagree, and that's fine. And that's where then you start putting the issues on the table and start working through them. Because no matter what you decide, you then want to handle them in the best way possible, right? You want to have the best battle plan, if you will, for dealing with them.
So the field naming rights has happened. We mentioned stadium naming rights would probably have more value. Would it not behoove the board or anyone else with a vested interest to start talking about that now instead of waiting, 12 months from now when the administration is going to show up at your door saying, here's the deal we have. It's the deal we have sitting on my desk right now. So we got to do it.
Yeah, I mean, we could have done field naming rights 10 years ago, 15 years ago, right? You can't go back and rewrite history, but how much, what would that value have been over the last 10 years if we'd had naming rights on the field 10 years ago, right? We could do it last Monday, we could do it today, we could do it 3 years from now, we could have done it five years ago. So, yeah, we should be looking at that. We should be looking at and evaluating things like naming rights to the stadium to see where that might benefit us. And again, maybe we'd have some back and forth as to positives and negatives in that regard. But yeah, it shouldn't be, here it is Friday night, you get a text at happy hour, and then Monday morning we're going to vote on something that has a lot of unanswered questions. I tend to not do happy hour, but some folks do. absolutely. And that's part of the duty. That's part of the job.
All right. That's going to be the final word, Barry. I want to thank you so much. You provided a lot of information. Of course, there's still more questions. We'll have to get you on again real soon so I can hit you up with more of these tough questions. Thank you all for listening. We really appreciate it. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m., and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.